Good evening. Pardon me. I'm used to the cart intro. Michael's here this evening, and I'll get around the air without the other cart that we usually use. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 477 for those of you that subscribe to them, and it's January 25th, 1981. I have to apologize for my guest last week. I'd been going back and forth to Los Angeles the past 3 weeks because of illness. My parents and my father had surgery on Monday. Being 90 years old, I wanted to be there when he went to the hospital, so I took the plane Sunday afternoon. I was going to stay here and do the program, and I thought I just should get on to L.A., and that was a decision I made after I talked to Bill Kasing, who has done many radio shows and TV shows, wrote the book We Never Went to the Moon, and he assured me that he had a lot of preparation and would give you a good broadcast. And when he was in the room here for 10 minutes, he started to pass out and faint, and KLRB turned on music, and he came in asking my daughter and one of the disc jockeys here to ask him questions. They weren't familiar with his book or with the space program, and it seems that the preparation needed for this kind of broadcast was not done. And those of you that get the tape or listen and wonder what in the heck was going on, I thought I had it in the hands of competence. I have never missed a broadcast in 9 years. When I go camping in Canada or go to New York, I've made tapes in advance and had my program set with the station and have never handed the program over to somebody. But in this case, with this kind of illness, I thought Bill Kasing could cover it. He said he would. And please accept my apologies for whatever went on that spent your time that wasn't of interest, and I hope that some of it was of interest to you. I haven't heard the tape yet. I haven't got the courage to get into that yet. The interim of my parents having the flu and pneumonia, surgery, both of them sick, at the same time kept me busy, and it was a good time not to be concerned with the inauguration or the hostages. One of my worst fears for the past 8 years was the realization that someday Ronald Reagan would be made president of the United States. And being as I've done many years of research on Reagan and the people that he's putting into his cabinet and the people that pushed him into office, I think if I had stayed here, I would have been very frustrated and upset. It was a good time for me to have my mind and other matters. My niece, at the dinner table the other evening, referred to the Iranians as barbarians when they left the soil there and said that they had been, in quotes, mistreated, the worst being the one who tried to escape. The others didn't have it so bad. And I asked her, do you think the Savak were barbarians? And she said, who are they? This is a young, she married my nephew around 25 years old, and I cannot stand this kind of stupidity. When people have an opinion, it should be based on what they read or books and not mouthing these words that the media gives you. If you understand the CIA and what they did in Iran and Mossadegh and the torture and the shooting down of students or controlling the food supply and exploiting an entire population for the multinational corporations, specifically Morgan Trust or Chase Manhattan for profit, and keeping people a form of slavery, not educating it at home, not building up schools, and so forth. And these hostages came home alive. And I think that says a lot for the situation and for keeping things at a stalemate so they at least could return. And these terms, such as barbarians, are for stupid people. I don't think it was right to take them, and I've done many broadcasts on the hostages when they were taken. But it wasn't right that we were there, and when we do something wrong, we can expect a counter-reaction on their part. That's very simple, and what form it takes, we are never going to know. The Iranians could have bombed the entire American fleet out in the Gulf over there and pulled at Pearl Harbor. They're home, and instead of being grateful that they are home alive, we're using it as a propaganda tool to further our interests, our particular interests in the Middle East. Pardon me if my throat is hoarse. I think I picked up the flu from the folks, and I came in with some temperature tonight, but I wouldn't leave you two weeks in a row at KLRB without being sure I was on the air, and hopefully I'll be here every Sunday night. I want to ask one question before I get into some other material here. Where is David Rockefeller when the president is inaugurated? I don't remember seeing David Rockefeller on the rostrum in past inaugurations, and I have to look up the books on Richard Nixon's inauguration. We have the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and where does David Rockefeller fit in? He stays in the background and selects the presidents, such as Jimmy Carter, or the vice president, such as George Bush, and many of the Rockefeller people are wining and dining the Reagans right now. But where do they fit, the Rockefeller family, into the inaugurations, and why aren't they visible? There was a movie on Channel 28 or Channel 9 up here, Bill Moyer, on the Bilderbergers, and they show David Rockefeller arriving as literally the king of the United States, Mr. Big of the entire world. Is he too big to come to a presidential inauguration, and is he above either party that he just continuously selects the candidates for us and manipulates in the background? Let me know if you saw any pictures of him at this inauguration. I wasn't aware that he was there. Ronald Reagan's speech when he was inaugurated began this way, the second paragraph: "The orderly transfer of authority as called for in the Constitution takes place as it has for almost two centuries, and few of us stop to think how unique we really are. In the eyes of many in the world, this every four-year ceremony we accept as normal is nothing less than a miracle." Now, 4 years, this four-year ceremony that took place in 1960 when John Kennedy was killed, in 1963, Robert Kennedy was killed before the 1968 elections, Mary Jo Kopechne was murdered, and all of the people involved and around the Ted Kennedy debacle and the murder of Mary Jo Kopechne were later exposed at Watergate and never put on the stand or investigated, such as E. Howard Hunt, Tony Lasowitz, the Cubans, the assassination teams of the Republican Party. And we also had no investigation of the murder of Nelson Rockefeller that made Ronald Reagan's presidency possible. If there's anything that makes me puke, it's the accolades of the way the system works. The system works if you survive the bullets. Now we have George Bush, vice president, former director of the CIA. Now the orderly process will no doubt be interrupted before the 4 years are over. Ronald Reagan and the politicians praise the political process. The process only works when other people who would be president, such as Howard Taft or Adlai Stevenson, people that work their way up, are murdered and moved aside so that a specific hand-picked team get on a conveyor belt, and no matter who's in their way, they end up being the president of the United States. Ronald Reagan is part of that conveyor belt, and he finally made it, and I hope the news media and CBS, NBC, Associated Press, the whole schmear, I hope they're happy with him, because now that they've got him, they've got to live with him, and they also have to face certain facts about Ronald Reagan's past, where he came from, who his cabinet people are, and the conflicts, for example, the moral majority versus the mob entertaining and hosting and working with Ronald Reagan. Somebody called me this evening before I went on the air and brought out that fact. Mr. Falwell doesn't like mobsters or organized crime around the White House. They're trying to fight pornography, child prostitution, narcotics, breaking up families, gambling, and so forth. So Reagan is split in the middle, and we have to watch him torn apart little by little, and I don't think it will be too hard to do. He wanted it. He got it. He said the oath, and as I said, I'm glad I was away caring for my parents the best I could and didn't have to listen to all that brahu on the television and radio. I spent a lot of time at the airport the last 3 weeks going back and forth to L.A. every week and coming up here for the weekends, and my mother had at the table next to her bed the article I wrote for The Realist in 1974. That was seven years ago now, my second article on the Senate Select Committee as part of the cover-up. And I wanted to index the articles I wrote for Paul Krasner. One of the projects I want to do is republish those articles in a book, along with other articles I've written. So I started to the airport at indexing certain facts that I wrote a long time ago. And in there, I talked about the plans to kill the president of Panama, taking over the narcotics operations called Operation Intercept, the use of Richard Nixon's plumber team for crises through his life that involved counterintelligence. And the important thing is that these people's names are so closely linked to the Ronald Reagan administration that you could just take the name Watergate off or Nixon. And as I said before, it goes on and on. I wrote at that time, if Richard Nixon moves out of office, Agnew moves in and Reagan will follow him. And I've mentioned that to you before because I talked about the narcotic war, and the week before last I talked about that book on heroin and fascism that had just come out. And 7 years ago I wrote that the war in Asia will escalate after the elections. This is in 1974, right after Richard Nixon was in. The Middle East is waiting for their U.S.-fomented war next. A Democratic president could have changed the course of history, not proving they would, but there's more profit in bombings than in bombings and building airplane or parts for warfare. There's more profit distributing and importing narcotics, and that the CIA transports them, and that the drug traffic from Asia involves more billions than military profits. This article, as I was indexing it, goes to Casper the Axe Weinberger and how he was slashing domestic programs. And as I say, the names run through then as now. Robert Vesco, who was working with Bill Casey, had him under salary, and Casey's now in the cabinet of Ronald Reagan, and how he was working with Edward Nixon, the brother of the president. And I also wrote about the dangers of Alexander Haig, who only had a 5-day hearing and without the tapes was sworn in. I wrote about the martial law without the riots, about William Timmons, who's again on the staff of Ronald Reagan, who was with Richard Nixon as part of a White House espionage group. And I wrote about Roy Ash of Litton Industries, who was one of the big people behind Ronald Reagan, who helped put military junta in power in Greece and in the United States. And I also wrote then General Haig said he didn't give up his military career to shuttle papers. He intends to shuffle us instead, and wrote about Haig and said there is indication that the military and the intelligence agencies will be operating and that Haig and others do not put ends far above the means. Now, Alexander Haig said this last week that there's matters more important than war, and he wouldn't think twice about going to war in the Middle East. And I listed the institutions that should be dismantled, and of course they're more powerful than ever. The Office of Management Budget, the Office of Emergency Service, and I wrote that Ronald Reagan, who hopes to be president, is pushing hard in California for the Office of Emergency Service for means to control us, and that the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Drug and Law Enforcement Agency, is similar to Nazi Germany, and they import narcotics on CIA planes and use the federal government for their profits of narcotics and so forth. I'm trying to think about, as I say, index this. And I started to do this and separate the names so that when you study the current times and the Reagan administration, you can have access to the articles I've written and see how long ago it was perfectly obvious that these characters would be placed in the positions they're in. I wrote about planted marijuana in the binoculars of John Lennon as an excuse to deport him, and how he was an outspoken critic of warfare, genocide, and political prisoners in the United States. And by planting this narcotic, they could get rid of him. And I wrote about the mind control programs that Ronald Reagan wanted and instituted at UCLA as a means of controlling people's brains and their lives, their ability to reason. And also, I warned about General Alexander Haig, who was then chief of staff in the White House, who passed over 243 generals for his promotion, and the danger of Clarence Kelly, who then was director of the FBI, who is now working with the Wackenhut Corporation in Florida, and a very dangerous outfit linked to Germany, Argentina, South America, and so forth. So what I want to do in the next year, if I have time, is to index the sheets that go with these tapes for the past 3 years that keep coming out with each tape. Index those and publish those just as a source of information. I get letters all the time asking about the facts of the Pope at Auschwitz or the murder of Nelson Rockefeller. If I take those sheets and index them and sell them, then people can look up the references if they don't have the tapes or even if they have them and get the newspapers and dates and articles themselves. I asked Bill Kasing last week to mention the Johnny Meyer story that came out of the Vancouver Sun. He had a press conference. You notice it wasn't in any single paper that I read, but I didn't read too many going back to L.A. this past week. Maybe you've seen it, and if you found it in a local paper, send it to me. This is from the Vancouver Sun, January the 16th, 1981. Johnny Meyer will tell on the CIA. He claimed that documents that were forged had been planted on him. He was before a case in Utah, and he presented documents that saying that the judge was in the pocket of the Summa Corporation. Johnny says they were planted, among other documents, and he went to jail for that. The Summa Corporation is the Howard Hughes organization. But he said that the CIA had control of the Hughes organization and that Howard Hughes was not buried in Texas. As I say, I asked Bill Kasing to share this with you, but I don't know yet if he did or if that was the time period where he actually freaked out. And he claimed that he was a political prisoner in Utah, similar to the hostages in Iran, and that he would reveal the agency's control of the Hughes organization and that Hughes was not buried in Texas. The important thing about the Howard Hughes story, or whether Lee Harvey Oswald, or the important persons of history whose graves, it seems, are empty or filled with somebody else, is not only the fact that these people aren't in those graves, but who is there, who is actually kidnapped and put there, what kind of subterfuge takes place where another person is even possibly buried in that place and not allowed to have the freedom to yell out or speak out. Who is doing this manipulation, and how often has it take place, and who's in the grave? Later, I'll refer to a new book called The Search of the Lindbergh Baby. The fact that it's a new book by Tower Paperback that the Lindbergh baby is still alive in New England. And at one time, at the course of the trial of Bruno Hauptmann, they believed that he was lying, that there were more people involved in the kidnapping of the baby, and there was reason to believe the baby was, in fact, alive. I have a book printed in 1950, that's 31 years ago, on this subject. And one way to get Hauptmann to talk, he got the electric chair for killing this baby. He claimed that he was innocent and didn't do it. One way they got him to talk was to take a lawyer in New York City and kidnap him and put him in an estate far away from everywhere and torture him and put him spread eagle and electricity on his testicles and on the back of his neck light bulbs, and they burned him and tortured him until he confessed that he did the kidnapping. They thought if they went to Hauptmann and said this man confessed, then Hauptmann would relax and break the case. And so when they went to court for him to confess, the men weren't experts at mind control, but they were New York City policemen, and he charged them with kidnapping and torture. But had he died and been put in another grave for somebody else to cover this up, what would the circumstances be then? Who would they put, whose grave would they use? And the case of Johnny Meyer saying Howard Hughes isn't in that grave, and I don't believe that is Howard Hughes, has been passed off by the major news media for a long, long time. I wrote in Playgirl in 1974 that Howard Hughes had died much earlier and that the CIA and the FBI used the Howard Hughes name to control what I think is the Nazification of America, fascism in America, the assassination teams in America, and that there's nobody to speak up because the money can come from the Hughes organization, just as Robert Mayhew set up assassinations from the Hughes organization, and there's nobody to control the money going in or out or who is being paid to torture or kidnap people to put in graves when the people that we believe are in those graves are not there. There's an article in 1977, that's 4 years ago, New York Times, New Mystery, Misplaced Millions of Dollars from Howard Hughes' Empire. In Wilmington, Delaware, $600 million in cash went out before he had passed away, and there was no accounting for the money. $65 million from 1966 to 1967. There was $800 million total and $142 million in cash, and they found out that $600 million just before they cashed in that other body was gone. Now, were they paying, who were they paying, and were these dollars going to assassination teams for payoffs, for killing? There were memos to suggest that $1 million was taken to Lyndon Johnson, and the Hughes Empire gave another million to Richard Nixon. These were the allegations of various memos. Pardon me. So, Lyndon Johnson certainly was a part of the Kennedy assassination. Richard Nixon has been implicated through that and other assassinations, the Chappaquiddick, the Robert Kennedy. He became the heir when LBJ decided not to run. And you get $600 million here and $600 million there. And we've talked about the missing money. Not only are the bodies not showing up and allegations that they're not there, but it takes hundreds of millions of dollars to swing these kinds of operations. I always said that start exhuming these graves and find out who's really there and then trace the chain of command, even though some are dead, of who did the autopsies, who identified the bodies, and carry it, if necessary, all the way up to the White House. That's where it would go, but it would be an easy way to solve some of these crimes. There was an article in the Los Angeles Times this last week by Robert Schetzel, S-C-H-A-E-T-Z-E-L. Interesting article on control, which goes back to the Hughes Empire, the CIA used as a cover. And this article is the first one that I've really seen that brings up the point that the National Security Council has usurped the right of our Constitution. And I've said many, many times, we had a triangle, a balance of power between the legislative, executive, judicial. And this article said at the end of World War II, a mechanism was set up that involved what we called national security, political and security affairs, and the national security advisors, such as Henry Kissinger and such as Brzezinski, tell Congress what we need to be safe, that they're controversial memos that Congress has no control of. And Congress doesn't even pass over the appointment of the National Security Advisor. The Secretary of State is passed or voted by the Congress, but not the National Security Advisor. And this article says to have sequentially Kissinger and Brzezinski in the role of National Security Advisor risks planting in the American government an organizational virus that could affect future administrations. The controversial Presidential Directive 59 on nuclear strategy is one example where the National Security Advisor, Brzezinski, excludes Muskie and his aides. And the article, as I say, is one of the first I've seen where the National Security Advisor can go on the border of Afghanistan, make statements about war, about going to war, that are totally out of the Congress, that are advised by these people. And I believe that the Howard Hughes organization that Johnny Meyer says is the CIA has set the framework for these kinds of subterfuge that negate the way the Constitution was written for us a long time ago. It can't hold up if the advisors make the decisions and tell the elected officials what is in the best interest of the United States according to them. There's an article by David Broder in the Los Angeles Times, the end of December, already worry of a manipulated Regan. This goes into to what extent does Regan run the show? Does he know what's going on? And it goes into the transition teams and the appointments, and that Regan isn't even a part of them, that Regan is absent. He's absent when the controversial William Simon was suggested for a position, or Donald Regan, or Alexander Haig, or Jackie Presser of organized crime. And it gives a list of Richard Allen and Ed Meese and the people behind him, and it says it's not clear that Regan is using this team, that the team is using him. And, of course, that's the way the puppet is going to be manipulated. There's another article this morning in the paper, Associated Press, Regan's Cabinet Looks Like a Millionaire's Club. And it goes into all the various millionaires, Bill Brock, who has $10 million or more. And it goes on and lists all the other millionaires, William Casey with $3 to $5 million that he talks about, William French Smith with $2 to $5 million, Casper Weinberg with $2 to $4 million, and almost every member of his cabinet, Labor Secretary Designate Donovan, who's been linked to the mob in New Jersey, to at least his property assets, $2 to $3 million. And John Block, property assets from $3 to $4 million, and so forth. This is a very select cabinet of people who bypassed the necessity of housing, health, safety. For the most part, they've accumulated in the American system tremendous wealth while they're going to push warfare budgets and cut back, if they can, the domestic programs, the people that do the labor, that pick the food that they eat, that do the services for them, that collect their garbage, the crippled, the maimed, and so forth. They're going to cut back their benefits, put private corporations into running hospitals for more private money and capital. And this is something we're going to have to look forward to, is that people removed from the needs of society are in the swing now, and they're certainly not going to lose money in their offices. Men like Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson and Jimmy Carter will be millionaires. The others are. Carters will come flowing in. The former presidents become multi-millionaires because of the contacts and I'm sure the payoffs for what they have done. I mentioned that book, The Great Heron Coup, and when I talked about it several weeks ago, I didn't have a chance to give you one quotation. Many of you people have the book, but there was one quotation that about sums up the work that I've done, and I don't think I read it with you on the air. When he writes about the drug enforcement agencies and the CIA and so forth, this author said, "We cannot discount the possibility the unofficial policy is executed by former agents who once were in the CIA and left the CIA and now run their independent secret service aided by lobby interests, very wealthy people such as Intertel," and that's the group that took the alleged Howard Hughes body out of Vegas that wasn't there. It says they're backed by the World Anti-Communist League. They mobilize CIA agents. They work with the Cuba, Chile, China lobby set up by Reinhard Gehlen. He was chief of Hitler's intelligence and the Vaslav Army. Those are all the people that worked with Marina Oswald and Lee in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Led by master spy Reinhard Gehlen, the West German equivalent of the CIA, he's the head of the BND. Now, this one paragraph in the book just about summarizes what he calls a renegade group headed by the Gehlen operation. And then he goes on the next page to support his belief that there could be former CIA people headed by Hitler's chief of intelligence who are renegades. The difference of opinion that I have with this author in the book, The Great Heron Coup, is that all of our government agencies have worked and were formed by Reinhard Gehlen. He set up the National Security Council from 1945 to 1947. And what you see in oppression or using food as a weapon or arming nations all over the world for future genocide or slavery, the blueprint was put in by Gehlen's men. He tightened up these agencies and created them. so that the pain and suffering that we see will only come by understanding Galen and hopefully overthrowing what they do through resistance and social movements. It's 10:30 now. We're going to take a 1-minute break, and I'll come back on the air with some more information about assassinations and conspiracies that are in the news this week.
Going to give you a quick ID. This is KLRB Carmel. Be back with more World Watchers International with Mae Brussel after this. I'm so high.